my great honor and pleasure to be with all of you this evening. Thank you for coming. Time is so precious. Every moment is precious because, according to how we utilize it, will determine our state of consciousness as well as our destiny. Moment to moment choices. You see, spirituality is not just about making a decision. It's not just about we surrender and then it's over. The concept of Sharanagati, of surrender, is a moment-to-moment choice that we make. Just like when a person goes to college, you may decide to get a PhD, and you might be determined to get a PhD. Many of you are doing. But the PhD only comes when you apply that determination moment by moment by moment over the years. Chanakya Pandit said, a moment lost cannot be bought back even with all the wealth of the world. So to choose to utilize our time to elevate our consciousness is really the highest expression of the human potential. And the power of sound is the greatest means for transformation. This is the topic for tonight. What we choose to tune our consciousness into through sound is very much what our experience of life will be, of what we will become. According to the Vedic literatures, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adhikavaye Muyanti Atsurya, that creation was inaugurated through sound. It is sound vibration that actually begins the whole process of the evolution of the universe. From the subtlemost element of the Atma, the soul, to the ego, the intelligence, the mind, earth, water, fire, air, and space. It is all activated by time. The Vedic literature explains the whole potential of material energy. It is in a stagnant state. And then Karanadakshaya Vishnu, Mahavishnu, he glances upon that and impregnates material energy with all living beings or spirit souls. But then those spirit souls are all like dormant seeds. And the whole mahatattva or potential of material energy is existing. But then Krishna tells in Gita, time I am. Then through time, the gunas, the three modes of nature, are activated. And from that, the whole creation, not only does it begin, but it is sustained by that. Time is so powerful. yet so subtle. If we really think about it, it's incredible. Can you see time? Can you touch it, taste it, smell it? Can you hear it? Time is so subtle. It's beyond our thoughts. It's beyond our senses. But yet, so powerful. Time is going to make every mountain into powder. It's going to dry up the ocean. It's going to burn out the sun. It's going to make the earth planet into dust. And it's all happening. It's all in the process. And that whole power is activated by sound. In this world, even in a very physical perception, we can see the power of just sound. A high-pitched sound could make a glass break. A sonic boom could crack walls. And one little gunshot could create a massive avalanche. Sound has such power of how it influences material energy. From a healing perspective, ultrasound, through sound, medical technology could see tumors within your body. Through sound, can dissolve kidney stones within your body. Through sound, the class can be disrupted by cellular failure. Thank you. That was the best part of the class. And on a subtler level, how sound affects the mind. Because really, a thought is a sound. When you're thinking, you're kind of hearing words, aren't you? Thoughts are very, very subtle sound vibrations. And that sound vibration within our mind can make us totally depressed or totally elated, could make us angry or forgiving, could make us greedy or generous. It's all thinking. In the world today, so much of how individually and collectively we are affected is through sound. Education. We're reading books. When we read, it's a sound that's going in our mind with each word. When we're hearing classes, professors or teachers are nourishing us. All the governments in the world, whether it's a democracy and people give speeches to get votes, or whether it's a dictatorship where people give speeches to just conquer others. It's based on the power of sound. And the more people understand the power of sound, the more they could either do good or do harm to themselves and to society. Knowledge is power. If we misuse it, it could have terrible effects. If we use it properly, it could be very beneficial. Music. How music affects people's minds, how affects the society to think in common ways, and oftentimes how it affects our heart. Music has such a power to awaken various emotions. Some music, when it's singing about the injustices taking place, it makes us angry and ready to revolt and even lay down our lives for a higher cause, whether it's speeches, music. Other music makes us really passionate, sexually passionate. Other music makes us very peaceful. Other music makes us cry. Sound is so powerful, how it affects our lives. And all of the great saints throughout all the great traditions of the world have told us that the most direct way of transforming our consciousness to the spiritual platform is through the power of sound. In the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was playing the role of everyone within this world. We think we know things, but then situations happen that are beyond our control, and we understand that I really don't know much of anything. You see, the sufferings of this world, they have, if we are intelligent, they humble us so that we really take shelter of a higher power. But if we're not so intelligent, then the sufferings in this world just make us more arrogant to just fight against. But the problem is, the powers against us are so beyond any of us. We have to grow old, we have to get diseased, and we have to die. And so many things happen in between. Arjuna was in a situation that was beyond his control. They weren't going his way. And his emotions were stirring so much. And he really thought he knew what he was to do. And he was speaking so much good information. But in the end, he realized it wasn't enough. He fell into great confusion. Karponya doso bahata svabhava. And then he turned to Krishna and said, I am confused about my duty. I do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. I've lost my composure. Please instruct me. Krishna, up until now, I've just been talking with you and joking with you and treating you like a friend and all of that. And that was nice and it was wonderful. But now I'm really in an emergency situation. And I need your help. Now I'm your disciple. You're my guru. Please help me. And it wasn't until Arjuna, his heart was really open, that Krishna spoke. Until then, he remained silent from giving any true instructions. Why? Because knowledge is sound. It is transmitted through sound. And just like even nourishing food, if we have no hunger, we don't have the power to digest it. And if we don't digest it, the nutrients really do not benefit us. They just come in and go out. Yes, with food they come in through our mouth and they go out from another part. So sound. If we really feel the sense of urgency, if you're just coming tonight for some entertainment or for some social purpose, then you'll get a little benefit. But if you, like Arjuna, feel an urgency, feel a need, that this is a troubled world, and there are powers so much beyond myself, and there is so much suffering. It may be in me, it may be in my loved ones, it may be in all around. Unless we really ask these questions and have a need to discover the answers. Who am I? Why is there suffering? What is death? Who is God? What is my relationship? What is my real relationship with the environment, material nature? What is my relationship with other people? When we feel that there's an urgency to understand these things, there's a hunger of the heart. Then when we receive the power of the sound of transcendental knowledge, it comes in our ear, but it doesn't go out the other ear. It comes into our heart. And it transforms our heart. And how does that transformation take place? Through hearing the power of the sound of Krishna's message in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, he was transformed from being a very, very confused, lost soul who was really suffering into a person who was totally courageous, who had an ultimate divine purpose to achieve. And that purpose was love. That purpose was compassion. That purpose was to be an instrument of Krishna's grace. He became supremely happy because he no longer had an ego, a false ego. He was just an instrument of grace. He was no longer debilitated by thinking, I can do this and I can't do that. Ahankara vimuda. Now he was thinking, let Krishna do it through me. Through love. That was the transformation. And that is the opportunity that everyone has. The true self is Satchit-Ananda. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita that there are these eight material elements, earth, water, fire, air, mind, intelligence, and the ego. And beyond that is the spiritual energy. The living force, the soul, that is our true self. And that soul is na jayate mriyate vakatachi. It has no birth and it has no death. Its nature is, it is everlasting. We are full of knowledge and we are full of happiness, ananda. And the nature of the ananda of the soul, the atma, is it is not determined by external circumstances. When due to the false ego, we forget who we really are and we identify with this temporary body, this temporary mind, we have such a vacuum within our heart. We have to find pleasure. We have to find meaning through things, so many things. through money, through fame, through physical pleasures. But no matter how much we get, it's never enough for two reasons. One is it's always temporary. It comes and it goes. And two is we're looking for God's love. That's our potential, which is the highest happiness. And we're looking for it through little things, fleeting things. And the beginning of real spiritual knowledge is to understand what is real wealth, what is real happiness, and what is the mirages of this world promising us that, but never satisfying us. And once we get a glimpse of a taste of that reservoir of real love, real joy that is within us, we don't want to just enjoy it, because that's not the way love is. When we love God, when we love Krishna, we love everyone, and we want to share it. Not in an arrogant, sectarian way, but with real compassion, with real concern. That state of consciousness is what every living being is looking for. Nitya siddha Krishna prema sadya kabunoi sravanadi sudichiti koriyayudhoi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has told us that this love for Krishna is within the heart of every living being. And by associating with saintly people and chanting God's holy names, this divine sound, that love is awakened. An example. The sun shines in the sky. It shines on trees. Little seeds become trees. And the energy of the sun remains within that tree. It becomes wood. Wood is not fire, but fire, the fire of the sun, is within that wood. And when you put fire on wood, it actually awakens the fire element within the wood. So in the same way, it is our nature, Satchit Ananda, to enjoy experiencing Krishna's infinite love. And being an instrument of that love. When we experience Krishna's love, we become so humbled and so grateful. It completely purifies us. And then we offer our love back to Krishna and to all beings. When we associate with people who love God, it's like putting fire to wood. Even though we can't even see our love for God, we can't see that ecstatic peace, especially when there's a stormy day in our mind and we're anxiety and we're depressed and we're frustrated and we're envious and we're just longing for all kinds of things that are not at all favorable to us. It's like wood. But when we associate with the power of sound, it awakens that divinity, that spiritual potential, that bhakti within us. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Sastra Khoi, Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoi. That even a moment's association with the sadhu, a saintly person, can transform our life. And what is that association, satsang? It's hearing. When we come before a saintly person, we hear. This is a principle. In the Bible, when Jesus would speak, sometimes he would say, "Those who have ears, hear." And whatever we see in Christianity is based on his words. Not only his words, but his life. And what is? How do we know about his life? By other people writing it down. That's sound. Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita. Those are his words. And his life was such a transcendental inspiration. Vyasadev wrote down his life in Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the power of sound. And when we associate with people who love God, they will speak God's message. This is the principle of parampara, or disciplic succession. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adhikavye. Krishna spoke to Brahma. He just spoke a little. But that little that he spoke awakened so much from within him, his potential to know God, to love God. And through sound, he created the material, physical, subtle universe. But through sound, he informed us forever what the whole purpose of the universe is. Because the universe is a very complex machine, wouldn't you say? The sun is rising and the moon is waxing and waning, and the oceans and the rain and the clouds and the earth. And who could create a machine like the universe? It's unbelievable. Things are so big. There's Himalayan mountains. How big is the sun? It's immense. A million times bigger than the earth, I think. It's gigantic. It's so big. But yet, even though those such enormous planets, mountains, oceans, everything's composed of particles that are so tiny, they're inconceivably small. Molecules, atoms, neutrons, electrons. And then there's energies in between those. Nobody could see them. We just could see some things. And by the way, those things are moving or affected, we can understand there's something subtler making it do that, and then we have to speculate so many ways. It's inconceivable. Bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest, everywhere. That's creation. Very complex. This human body, so complex. Every time medical scientists cure one disease, some other one comes. We have to keep trying to cure them. But it's the nature of the world. Every time we create peace after a war, I think after World War I it was called the war that ends all wars. But then a few years later, there was World War II. And it was worse. And then after that, there was the League of Nations and the United Nations, and we forming this so that there will be no more wars. There's so many wars. There's always. So that's the way creation is. But when we associate with sadhus, with saintly people, it actually awakens within us the true qualities. The soul. Because sadhus speak. God's message through the disciplic succession has come down through the ages. And in this extremely complicated universe, there's an instruction guide. Whenever there's a very, very sophisticated, complicated machine, there's an instruction guide to teach you how to use it. Otherwise, it will not serve its purpose. I'll give you an example. When one of our brahmachari computer experts come to my room, they're just like, and I'm like, what they know how to do with that computer. And for me, it's like, do. And every couple of days, I have to say, what's happening? And they come and go, because they know how to use it. Yes? They can do thousands of things. I can, with their help, I could send an email. But it seems like, I don't know, India is very much karmically oriented toward computer engineers and software engineers. But if you know how to do, you understand how it works. And there's such a potential. So material scientists, through their understanding deeper and deeper and deeper, how the subtler and grosser elements are interacting with each other, they can create all this incredible technology. But how are they learning it all? The basis of it is sound. They're learning from each other. They're reading, they're studying, their minds are thinking. It's all sound. But the parampara is the creator. Janmadhyasayataha, the absolute truth, the supreme Lord, with creation teaches its purpose and how to live within this creation in such a way that we can get the maximum benefit. And we can give the maximum benefit. So why, as eternal souls, divine children of God, who has unlimited potential to love and to create peace and create incredible happiness within this world, and ultimately to help people to be liberated from suffering and find Krishna, why should we be satisfied with anything less when that potential is within us? We get so caught up in the whirlwind of mental energy, and people are so in that flurry of passion and ego, we just lose touch with what we really want. But if we're a little bit objective, in my experience, I've never found anybody who's really objective. Everyone's subjective, because we all see the world according to our own mental condition. But when we try to be somewhat objective, we'll see that no matter how rich you become with money, it doesn't make you much more happy. The same depressions, the same frustrations, the same arrogance, the same challenges are for everybody. Whether you're a billionaire or whether you're a brahmachari in the ashram, sleeping on the floor. The simpler we can find our happiness in simple things, the happier we become. And I've seen it. I've seen extremely wealthy people who are really happy. But why are they really happy? Because what happens with the stock market and what happens with, you know, the labor unions and everything else going on doesn't really affect them so much, because their happiness is from simple things. Simple things like loving relationships. Simple things like taking prasad. I don't think rich people eat much better than our brahmacharis. But the difference is our brahmacharis probably enjoy some rice and dal more than other people, you know, with the most highly paid chefs preparing various exotic preparations for them. Because the happiness is not in the taste in your tongue. The happiness is in your state of mind and heart, right? How many of you have been really upset and miserable and then you eat your favorite thing? Did that make you ecstatic? It's like... You can't enjoy it. Huh? Or what to speak if you're totally nauseous and someone gives you your favorite preparation. Just the smell of it makes you vomit. I'm sorry to be so graphic. But that's the way it is. So what is happiness? It's not just the thing. There's so much advertisement and propagation about sex life being such a big, great thing. For having beautiful children and raising them to be virtuous lovers of God, Krishna says, I am that sex. It's a great thing. But all this publicity and all this propagation and all this, all the movies and cinemas and magazines and internet stuff just to incite people's desires. But where does it give anyone any real happiness? Love gives people happiness. Not just these physical sensations. So people are mad after money, and they're mad after sex, and they're mad after power, and they're mad after fame, and they're mad after having property and things. Nunam pramata, Bhagavatam says, because they're mad. Mad means they've lost connection to their self. And what they're looking for, they can't find because it's in the wrong direction. But when we associate with sadhus, with saintly people, whether they're billionaires or millionaires or middle class or lower class or brahmacharis on the floor, that's all a detail. It really doesn't matter. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had 10 children. How many of you have 10 children? How many of you want 10 children? Somebody just told me one Swamiji is telling all Hindus to have 10 children. many, many different missions in the world. But he actually had 10 children. And he had so many properties. He had a property in Puri, he had a property in Calcutta, he had a property in Godrumdweep of Navadweep, he had other properties too. In Odisha, in Bengal. He had a property at Radha Kund and Braj Bhumi Vrindavan. But he was really happy. He was a magistrate in the British court system. He was a wealthy person with tremendous political power. But he was happy, not with those things. He utilized all those things for the upliftment of others. His happiness was eating a paratha that was offered to Krishna. His happiness was chanting the holy names of the Lord.
Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! Krishna Krishna! Hare Hare! Hare Ram! Hare Ram! Ram Ram! Hare Hare!
His happiness was in reading Srimad Bhagavatam and in speaking the message of Srimad Bhagavatam according to time, place, and circumstance, and according to people, to elevate them, to bring them closer to Krishna. His happiness was in serving. He wrote, where there's the greatest need, there's the greatest opportunity to serve. He also wrote, the difficulties and pains that I endure in serving you, my Lord, are the greatest pleasures to my heart. That's a very simple consciousness. That means his happiness is in what everyone has. The opportunity to hear, to chant, to develop loving friendships with like-minded devotees, and to serve. And in every situation we can serve. Whether it's big service or small service by material sense is not important. What's important is the love in which we serve, the sincerity. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was such a person, and his wife Bhagavati was in the same state of consciousness as him. She raised all those 10 children. And every one of those children were paramahamsas. They were all saints because of the example of the mother and father. And a person who used to come and sometimes live in a little hut on the property of Bhaktivinoda was Gaurkishore Das Babaji. He had nothing. He was a Babaji. He had no wife, he had no family, he had no children. His only clothes were just a little kopan, a little loincloth that he wore. What he ate, just anything. Vegetarian, of course. It really didn't, you know. But he just loved to chant the names of God. And he loved to hear the wisdom of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So they were, either one, they were happy with the simple things in life. Bhagavad Gita is teaching Arjuna to be happy with the simple things in life. And with that state of consciousness, to perform one's duty. Whether one's a warrior or a politician, whether one's a scientist or an engineer or in business, those are all details. If we're happy with the simple things, loving devotional service to the Lord, and relationships based on that, then we utilize what we have with love. Otherwise, we are exploited by the very things we have because we become so attached to them. And then their condition becomes our whole state of reality.
Yes? It's like Srila Prabhupada gave an example. He was driving in a car. Somebody was driving him. And he saw somebody crash into somebody else. It wasn't a bad crash. It was just a scratch. And the person came out of the car and he saw his car was scratched. And he was so angry. He was screaming at the person. He said, "You scratched me!" And he was really totally out of control. "You scratched me!" And he was about to beat the person and fight the person, and Prabhupada was watching, thinking, he thinks he's the car. He's calling the car me. But the idea is, he's so attached to the car. Because he's so empty within himself, he has to find his happiness in the car. Now, Prabhupada was driving in a car just as nice as his. But if somebody hit Prabhupada's car, he would just say, "Oh, let's fix it. Just fix it, you know." And when Srila Prabhupada was in his last days and his body was emaciated, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, who was a great PhD scientist, he came and saw Prabhupada and said, he didn't say anything, but he was really brokenhearted to see his guru in such a physically ill state. And Prabhupada smiled. Prabhupada laughed. He said, "You are a scientist. You require evidence. I've been telling you all along that we're not these bodies. Well, you see, I'm still the same me, and I'm still just as happy, even though my body's like this." So he was using his disease just as a way of serving others. We were speaking the other night about Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj. I remember the first day I came to Gita Nagari, Brajalila Devi is here, one of his dearmost disciples. She called me and told me that Bhakti Tirtha Swami only had 3 days more to live, the doctor said. And he was requesting for me to come to visit him. So I immediately canceled whatever I was supposed to do and came. I was at a festival. There was a couple hundred people. And the main day of the festival, I was supposed to give a lecture in the afternoon. And in the morning I said, "I can't give the lecture this afternoon because I have to go." So the organizer of the festival, he said, "Well, you know, all these people are here. They came so far. Why don't you give a morning talk and then go?" So I said, "Okay." So I gave the morning talk, then I said, "I have to go." And then the organizer came. And about 100 people came, like a 6-hour drive. And there were these people all in his room. And he was talking to them. And I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was actually incredible. It was unbelievable. It was astonishing. Would you like to hear? People were totally transformed just by looking at him and by everything he spoke. Pin drop silence. Everyone was weeping with gratitude, receiving the words he was speaking. It was incredible. Just to see how a person's simple words could totally affect people's lives, everyone in the room. And when people came out of the room, they were crying, saying, "I've never had an experience like that in my life. I'll never be the same." And I went back in the room, because actually he was saying the same things he kind of always said.
He's talking about loving devotional service is the highest aspiration that we can have. And how to access that, we have to actually be humble and grateful and forgiving to others. If we hold on to spite and grudges and all these things, we're just holding on to our ego and another birth and another birth. We have to let go. It's not all. The only thing that's really important is to forgive, to be grateful, and to actually be transformed by the power of sound. So I went back in and I said, "How did you do that? I've known you for 40 years. I've seen you give hundreds of lectures, and I've seen you give hundreds of talks, and you're saying more or less the same things. But today, everyone was weeping. They were crying. They'll never be the same for the rest of their lives. None of these people. You just went right to the core of their hearts and occupied it with devotion to Krishna. That's what you gave them." And he smiled. He was emaciated, and he was tumors on his body, and he was supposed to die in a few days. And he said, "This disease is a blessing, because my life is to serve. And I could serve people more powerfully in a few days in this state than I could in years in a healthy state. So I'm not here to enjoy the body. I'm here to serve with the body. So now the body is giving me the greatest facility to serve in this state." So he said, "It's a blessing. I'm so grateful. I'm so happy." Does that make sense? So Srila Prabhupada, he was like that. He was teaching that simple things, seva is the pleasure for the heart. And we could perform seva in any situation. And when we associate with people who are speaking the truth and who are earnestly, sincerely trying to live by the truth, repeating the message that God has given through parampara, then it awakens the fire of that love, of that joy of serving from within us. So satsang is about sound. The Srimad Bhagavatam tells one of the effects of Kali, or illusion, this age, is that people go to holy places to bathe in the rivers, but they do not hear from the self-realized saintly persons who are there. It's most important. What we hear and who we hear from can make us completely illusioned or completely enlightened. Can make us a terrorist or can make us a compassionate instrument of God's love. That is satsang, to hear from the saints, from the sadhus. And what do the sadhus and the shastras teach us? That the prime benediction for all humanity is the power of the sound of the mantra, the holy names of the Lord. This is the prominent conclusion of scriptures. Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the essence, the crest jewel, the culmination of all Vedic knowledge, the commentary on the Brahma Sutras by the author, it concludes the last verse that by associating with saintly people and chanting the holy names of the Lord, one will be liberated of all suffering and ultimately attain the love of God that's within us. That's true liberation. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he spoke such profound philosophical messages, but his conclusion was really simple. Just find the value and beauty of serving and chant the holy names and share this message of kirtan with others. Nam namakari bahuta nija sarva shaktis. Because the name of God and God are none different. Golokera premadana harinam sankirtana. This sound vibration has descended from the spiritual world. Someone asked Srila Prabhupada, what do you hope to get out of all this chanting of Hare Krishna? And Prabhupada's answer was profound. He said, the goal of chanting Hare Krishna is chanting Hare Krishna. Because now we're chanting Hare Krishna, Cheto Darapana Marajanam, to clear the mirror of the mind from all the dust of all of our illusions and false attachments and our worries and our troubles. But when the mind is clean and the soul is awakened, then forever we want to glorify our beloved Lord, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. Now we are chanting for purification, but in the liberated state, we chant in ecstatic love. That is the power of sound. Would anyone like to ask any questions? Baladev Prabhu, is you can choose who's going to ask the questions.
Hey Krishna.
Can you stand up? Because I don't know where you... The power of sound... When it comes to microphones and sound systems, we don't know who's speaking.
Please tell me, what is your favorite sweet in prasadam?
My favorite sweet?
Yeah, in prasad.
Huh?
In prasad.
In prasad.
Yeah.
This is a very philosophical In Sanskrit, the word sweet is madhuram. So, if I really think about that question,
I would say this, my favorite sweet is the Hare Krishna mantra. Most sweet of all sweets. Because it gives the greatest flavor to the heart. And it doesn't give high blood sugar. And you can take it all day long. And never get sick. You become very ecstatic. So the Hare Krishna mantra is the sweetest of all sweets. Because prema, loving devotional service, is the sweetest of all sweets. But I also like halava. Does that answer your question?
Those who want to ask questions can just raise their hands. Just one question can be given here. Just pass the mic here. This one.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you have always emphasized the relationship between devotees and the loving exchanges between the devotees. So, Maharaj, can you explain who exactly is a devotee? What is the definition of a devotee?
Who is a devotee?
Yes, Maharaj. Who exactly is a devotee? Is someone who chants Hare Krishna, can we call him a devotee? Or is it something beyond?
One time, Lord Chaitanya in Puri was asked the same question. There were a group of Vaishnavas, devotees from Kulina Gram. And Kulina Gram in those days in Bengal was well known for making very good silk ropes that were very strong. So Lord Chaitanya, because all of the people who came from Kulina Gram, they were all grihastas, they were all household, family people. And Lord Chaitanya told them, every year come and bring your best ropes to pull the chariots of Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. So Lord Chaitanya was teaching this principle that according to where people are from and wherever things are good, use it for Krishna. Yukta Vairagya. This place is known for good ropes. That's wonderful. You all know how to make good ropes. Don't renounce it. Make them for Jagannath. And not only for Jagannath, for everybody. Because there's going to be millions of people using those ropes to pull Lord Jagannath. So how, if you make those ropes, how you're spreading bhakti and you're giving such pleasure to Jagannath and you're giving such pleasure to all the millions of people that are going to be pulling the ropes. So through that simple instruction,
bring ropes every year for Chakan. He was teaching the essence of bhakti. So the next year they came, they brought the ropes, and one of the devotees asked that we are families. We have our wives and our husbands and our children and our jobs. And how can a family person like us, how can we become Krishna conscious? How can we develop love for Krishna? And Lord Chaitanya gave two instructions. He said, just chant the holy names of Krishna and serve the Vaishnavas. Serving Vaishnavas means hearing from them and then applying what we hear. Hearing from Vaishnavas, enlightening Vaishnavas, and any other type of service. And service is with care, with concern for the body, mind, and soul. And especially when we serve together for our higher cause. So they asked a question. How do we know who's a real Vaishnava? And Lord Chaitanya said, anyone who even once chants the holy name of the Lord sincerely is a Vaishnava, a devotee. So they went home. They took that instruction very deeply. Then they came back the next year and they asked Lord Chaitanya a question. They said, we are householders so busy with our family lives. How could we become Krishna conscious? And Lord Chaitanya said, you should chant the holy names of the Lord and serve the Vaishnavas. And they asked, how do we know who a Vaishnava is? And Lord Chaitanya said, one who is constantly chanting the holy name of the Lord is a Vaishnava. So they took that to heart and they went home. The next year, they came back. They said, how do we as fallen householders become Krishna conscious? How do we love Krishna? And he said, you should chant the holy names and serve the Vaishnavas. And they asked, how do we know who's a Vaishnava? And Lord Chaitanya said, anyone who, even upon seeing the people who see them, will start to chant the holy names, that is a Vaishnava. So in other words, there's different levels of devotees. So one who has faith in the personal conception of God and who follows the principles of devotional service, at least has faith in the principles and is, you know, making an effort even with shortcomings, that's a Vaishnava. On a preliminary level. And one who's actually very sincerely serving and very sincerely following and who actually is developed a taste for the holy name is a higher Vaishnava. And one who's really tasting the holy name and really connecting to Krishna's grace in such a way that they just want to be an instrument of Krishna's compassion in every way to others, that's the highest Vaishnava. Now we can understand this from many perspectives. Srila Prabhupada, in several places, he says a true Vaishnav is a person who is free of all envy. Now we can understand, in a preliminary state, people could be Vaishnavas, but the Srimad Bhagavatam also tells that there are devotees in the mode of ignorance, devotees in the mode of passion, devotees in the mode of goodness, and devotees in the transcendental state. Devotees who believe in Krishna and who follow certain principles in the way they dress and the way they, you know, do some sadhana and everything, but they're arrogant and they're abusive to others and they find faults in others and they like to criticize others and they're envious. They're devotees, but in the mode of ignorance. And those who are devotees who really want results to their actions. You know, they want, you know, wealth, they want fame, they want recognition. But they're serving and they're performing their sadhana. They're devotees in the mode of passion. And devotees in the mode of goodness are those who are really serving without all of these selfish expectations. And one who's actually serving with love, who is free of envy, that's a true Vaishnava. So actually a Vaishnava is one who is without envy. Actually a Vaishnava is one who serves with love. One who's a true Vaishnava is one who has that higher taste, who loves Krishna. And the lower stages are people who are in the process of becoming true Vaishnavas. If they associate with advanced devotees and they have some humility, then even if we are in the mode of ignorance or passion, we could come to that highest stage by Krishna's grace. Srila Prabhupada said the main point is that we are actually sincere. We're not duplicitous. We don't have ulterior motives. We really want to become pure. Even if we're in a fallen state, we want to recognize people who are pure and respect people who are pure, and we want to see others make progress. And we're trying. So that sincere effort is what makes us really Vaishnavas. Does that answer your question? Gargopal Prabhu, would you like to add anything?
Yes, one question that side, in the red shirt.
Swami, our life should be in such a way that it should not disturb the nature.
Say again.
Our life should be in such a way that it should not disturb the nature.
Disturb the nature.
Yeah. If that is true, I will proceed. If I look into the world and contemplate for a while, I can conclude that only animals are the things which are not disturbing the nature. And this... Slowly...
Only animals don't disturb the nature.
Yeah, okay. Only animals are not disturbing the nature. Every human is disturbing the nature. The very beginning thought as a human will start disturbing the nature. Like, as a human, I start to wearing clothes. The wearing clothes itself somehow disturb the nature. I start cultivating the land. That disturbs the nature. And eventually it goes on. Eventually it becomes, I start doing engineering. That disturbs the nature. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So, actually, if we stick to our first statement that we are not supposed to disturb the nature, then I should start living like an animal. And what animals do? And one more thing, what I have found is animals do follow their instinct, like what they do, what they wanted to do. And they don't really try to control themselves like how we are doing now. They don't need any temple. They don't need any guru, and they need nothing. They live happily out there. then why we need all these things? If you are living in that way, why we need this temple? Why I wear this shirt? Why I do my engineering? Why I need to study everything? Why all this nonsense around me?
Hare Krishna. Actually, human life, atato brahma jigyasa, human life is the opportunity to realize we're the eternal soul, we're not this body, and to awaken our love for God. Yes? That is the specific purpose of human life. Animals are very natural. They're eating, they're sleeping, they're mating, they're fending, and like that. And they should be honored and respected for what they do. But a human being is meant to go beyond just eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Because with the consciousness and the intelligence that a human being has, to understand what is beyond birth, what is beyond death, which animals can't do. When we use that power to just act like animals, then we pollute the world. It's not humans that pollute the world. It's humans who give up their human purpose to live like animals. Animals don't pollute the world because they're just living naturally. But it's completely foreign to the nature of human life to live like an animal. We have a higher purpose. Humans are meant to be the caretakers on behalf of God to all the animals and to Mother Earth and to everyone. And Mother Earth, she's our mother. And she wants to see all the human beings live in her planet for our real purpose, to love Krishna. She's Bhumi. She's the pleasure potency of Narayan, who has manifested in this form of material nature, Prakriti, in this world. Purusha Prakriti. So if we have a higher purpose and we're actually living simple living high thinking as Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas taught, then even if we make clothes, if we make the right kind of clothes for the right purpose and we grow the right kind of food with the right purpose where we're actually... what we call it, our eco-village, symbiotic biotechnology. Where we're actually grateful for Mother Earth. And what we take from her, we try to replenish with her. We try to replenish her rather than pollute her. If that's our motive, then our way of life... it's not disturbing Mother Earth. It's actually giving pleasure to Mother Earth. The greatest thing that Mother Earth wants to see of us, because we're all her children, is that we're happy spiritually. So even if you're an engineer and you do a few things that are not exactly eco-friendly, we should try to be as eco-friendly as possible. It's sustainable. It's gratitude. But even if we're doing some things, just like even saints sometimes ride in cars and airplanes and the exhaust is polluting the earth, right? But because they're doing it for a divine purpose, without selfishness, Mother Earth actually feels pleasure by that.
just like you may have a mother, and if you get sick, it disturbs her, but she loves you. If you're trying to get better, if you're trying to do well. So if we actually take our human life seriously and try to live in harmony, then even the little pollution things are pleasing to Mother Earth. But actually, as much as possible, we should live in harmony with the environment. That's an expression of our love for God, for Krishna. Does that answer your question? So please keep your clothes on. All right, Mother Nature is more happy with you. With you. With your natural clothes on, than if you started running around without in Mumbai.
Any questions? Okay, one mic is here. Yes, Father Mike.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, as we have been told, Mahamantra is the highest of all sound vibrations. But mostly, some of the time, what happens is that when we are in our locality or we are in our home, some of our relatives plays Bollywood or Hollywood sound. So, we were accustomed to that sound previously. So we started chanting Mahamantra in that particular tone. So is that will give same benefit as we chant from? In that particular tone only, so how to stop that, and is it beneficial?
You are really an amazing crowd. Lord Chaitanya said there are no hard and fast rules for chanting. So if you chant to those tunes, it's very good. But if you chant to the tunes that our great acharyas have chanted, it's far better. Any way we chant, if it's with sincere heart, whatever tune, it's very nice if we chant the right mantras with feeling. But when we chant following in the footsteps of the great acharyas, that really connects us in a much deeper way as we chant. My dear friend Gary, if any of you read The Journey Home, you know about Gary. He has come from Malibu, California to be with you.
like to say something to these students, Gary?
It's an honor and a pleasure to be in this beautiful temple with all of you intelligent young people and Radhana Swami. You're the future, the way I see it. You're the future of this planet. And from what I can see, it's in good hands. You asked some interesting questions. And Radhanath always has the perfect answer. It's a So, I didn't quite get it. How many of you have read Radhanath's book, The Journey Home? Ah, wonderful. I was listening to Radhanath speak about sound.
I asked Gary's mother if she liked, she said, I read the book. I said, did you like it? She said, how could I not? It's all about my son.
My mother loves me. That's all I can say. Does anyone want to ask me anything at all? No. That's smart, because Radhanath could answer it much better. I listened to Radhanath speak tonight, and it made me think about what he said, that words, very powerful, more powerful than bullets. You know, listening to Radhanath speak, the words inspire us to become better, to become closer to God, to serve man. Listening to Hitler speak, he talked people into murdering millions of people. So words are very, very powerful. And I think we should all learn to think before we speak. I've heard it said that words are like arrows. Once you release them from your mouth, you can't retrieve them. And sometimes we wish we could, because we say stupid things, but Radhanath is right. The vibrations of sound and words, you know, in the Bible it says in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, you know, and as he was saying, the words, sound, vibrations are what move everything in life. So, Hare Krishna.
Let us thank Jolina Sadhana Swami Maharaj for a wonderful inspiration class. We're loudly chanting.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.